let me ask you this. What is the appeal to Dave of music on vinyl? Why is he in a record store?
That's a really good question. You know why he's in a record store? I'll tell you. Simply because of the way the radio show began. All of these stories, which are in this book, come from the radio show. And the radio show began, well, the idea of it began almost 25 years ago now. I've been in radio all my life. And I was writing a column for a daily radio show in heard across Canada. And one of the producers came to me and said, we should do our own radio show. He was a music guy, and he wanted to do a music show with me as a host. He thought he'd choose the music, and I'd introduce it. I said, "Well, it has to be more than that. It has to be about something more than that." So on the spot, I dreamed up this fictional guy who ran a record store who was going to host the show in my mind at that time. And so that character was born. The music we played was going to come from his fictional record store, and then the show kind of morphed a bit, and I started telling stories about this guy, and the music had less of a importance, but I still had the guy in the record store.
After doing this for nearly 20 years with these characters, do you see your life through a Vinyl Cafe filter or a Dave filter or a Morley filter? Do you have experiences where the first thing that runs through your mind is, well, how would Dave react to this?
No, but I have moments where I think, oh, good, and I'll note it down and think, I can use this. It's might have been E.B. White who said, you know, humorists fatten on trouble. When the ironing board collapses and everybody else is rushing to help, the humorist is reaching for his notebook. At some level, I'm just delighted when something happens that might be fodder for a story.
There are stories where generally just funny things happen. You read for us part of a story called The Phone Message. But there are some other stories where absurd things happen, but there's really much more going on. And the tone is a little bit different, even though there are places where we're still laughing. And I'm thinking in particular of the story called The Laundry Chute.
Mm. That story has such an interesting beginning because it began as a slapstick idea. It was Christmas, and I was going to put Dave in a Santa Claus suit and get him stuck in a chimney. And I started thinking about that, and I thought, well, that even stretches my credulity. And then I thought, well, I could make him, but I like the idea of him being stuck in a chimney. And I thought I could stick him in a chimney as a boy. So I began to think of him as a boy, and he grew up in Cape Breton in Nova Scotia on Canada's east coast, which is not unlike the poorer parts of Maine. And he lived, I imagined, in a small town with a big rambling wooden house, which I thought would have a back staircase and a laundry chute. And suddenly I thought, well, wow, he could get caught in the laundry chute. And I started thinking about when he was a boy, and that's coal mining part of Canada. There were a couple of horrible coal mining disasters in the 50s and 60s when he would have been growing up. And I imagined if you're a small guy and you were following these things on the radio as one would in those days, it was one of these events like this, the one that happened in South America recently where, you know, there were dozens of miners trapped underground for a week it was in this case. You would be hanging by your fingernails. Probably you would have family or would know families who would have men down there. And I thought it would be altogether make sense that later as a boy you would play mining rescue and mining disaster. So in the story, Dave, the story which began, I thought was going to be him as a adult stuck in a chimney, ended up with him as a little boy throwing his sister's dolls down the laundry chute so he could go and play mine rescue, and then he gets trapped in the laundry chute, and mom and dad are away, and it becomes a moment of quite intense connection. There's that word again, between Dave and his sister Annie, as he is caught by his belt loop on this hook halfway down the laundry chute, and she's singing to him and trying to keep him comforted as they wait for the parents' return.
And this is a story that's actually told from the point of view. It's a flashback, but it's kind of a flashback from Dave's mom.
Mm. Well, yeah, and then that's right. She's still in the house. She's an older lady at the time, and she's just a widow, and she's fallen for this volunteer fireman who's appeared in town, and he's sweet on her and is coming over to the house and to do a fire safety inspection, and he sees the laundry chute and is horrified by it. He only sees a fire hazard, another, you know, a chimney that could fuel a fire, and wants to seal it up. And as he goes to seal it up, she looks inside it and sees the little piece of leather belt, I think, left on the hook way up there. And then she's remembering this, how it got there all those years ago, when her boy, now Dave, the record store guy, is hung there in the darkness. I told that story. I had an interesting experience for that story, a very interesting theatrical experience. I told that story in Sydney Mines, Cape Breton, which is the heart of the coal mining territory. I was quite nervous as I went to tell it. I'd been telling it on the road for a couple of weeks all over the Maritimes, and knew it was a good story because it was getting well received and it felt good on stage. But I was now going right into the heart of the beast to tell it. And I thought, you know, who am I to not imagine this whole thing? Because there's a fair degree of in the unspoken part of the story, and also on the edges of the story, memory and feeling about these coal mining disasters. And I just thought I had no right to come and tell these people their own story. And so I stood on stage and told it and was a little nervous. And then the story ended, and it was met with the silence we were talking about a moment ago, that which just showed an intensity of reception. And then, instead of applause, which is what usually happens, and out of the silence, it was an old man's voice came, and he said, "Stuart," he called this right out of the theater audience, "I worked in that mine," meaning the Spring Hill mine, which I had referred to. And the whole artifice of theater broke down. I connected so deeply with this guy, the story had, that he actually forgotten he was in a theater. You know, you don't call out to the performer on stage and engage them in dialogue. It's just not part of the rules. Cubby Cuthbertson was his name. And an 85-year-old guy at the time, since died. And I met him after the show, and we corresponded for a few years, Cubby and I. It was a profound moment for me.